welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. April is Autism Awareness Month, and joining us now is Roya Ostovar, PhD. Roya Ostovar is a PhD is a clinical instructor in psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and the fellowship and training program director at the Center for Neurodevelopmental Services at McLean Hospital in Belmont, Massachusetts. In this capacity, she is in charge of the direct clinical supervision of fellows, interns, residents, and other trainees interested in learning about the educational and clinical needs of children with neurodevelopmental disorders. She is a child and adolescent clinical neuropsychologist specializing in the assessment, diagnosis, and treatment of developmental and psychiatric disorders. This includes a subspecialty in the early diagnosis and evaluation of young children with autism spectrum disorder. Roya is also the author of The Ultimate Guide to Sensory Processing Disorder, Easy Everyday Solutions to Sensory Challenge, which we will be talking about today. Roya, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Thank you so much, Lisa. I'm so glad to be a part of your show.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm so glad to have you on. Now, Roya, in the introduction, you tell us about a five-year-old boy named Kaveh, and can you tell us about him and what his challenges were and what his parents were going through when they brought him in?
Sure. His case, Lisa, unfortunately, is not atypical in that we begin to see a lot of symptoms of sensory processing disorder very early on, and in most cases not diagnosed right away.
Okay.
And it's taken for a lot of other issues, mostly behavioral issues. And so in the case of this little boy, much like all the other kids that I see, he was having a lot of difficulty really adjusting to all the sensory information that was coming to him from the environment and reacting in a way that was very concerning for the parents. He was reacting in ways that seem like he is being uncooperative. He is maybe a picky child. He's not really going with the flow. He's being difficult or, not able to follow directions. And once you see these kids and you're able to figure out that, in fact, this is a disorder of how their brain processes sensory information, then you're able to step in and fairly quickly and in simple ways be helpful to these kids.
Oh, that is so important. You know, you write in the book, quote, behavior as a form of communication, quote, instead of focusing on the behavior and what your child is doing or not doing, try to figure out what your child is trying to communicate to you through his or her behavior. Now, a lot of that behavior, again, without the knowledge of sensory processing disorder, is seen as they're just being negative and difficult and the parents not or the teachers not really understanding. And that's why your book is so important, because you bring to light what sensory processing disorder is and if you can actually tell us what it is and whom and, you know, does it affect and how.
Sure. Sensory processing disorder, just simply put, it's a disorder in which the brain, for some reason, and we don't know why right now, has trouble accurately analyzing, processing, taking in the information and transforming sensory information that is sent to us by our sense organs. And, of course, our sense organs include sight, taste, hearing, touch, etc. And so when this information from the environment is collected by our sense organs, it is sent to our brain. And then the next step is that the brain takes this information and processes it and transforms it into the sensations and reactions that we feel. So when individuals have problems with this process, this condition occurs, and it really is one that affects the interior trip of information. Something happens in the brain, and that's why we get the reactions that we do. I do want to point out, Lisa, that this is really a universal condition, but in kids with sensory processing disorder, this is an exaggeration of this universal condition. We've all been in a place where we felt that the noise was too much, we just couldn't take it anymore. For those listeners who have issues such as headaches that they might get, finding yourself in a room that's quiet or darker, you find yourself calming down and sort of shutting out all the sensory information that is being thrown at you by the environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, my mother had what we now know would be sensory processing disorder, pretty severe. She was very sensory defensive. Fortunately, she passed away about 15 years ago, so it was before, you know, people really were talking about it. And all the doctors just said, oh, you're just hysterical, you have anxiety, you need to relax. And she used to spend a couple hours a day in a dark room, and you know, she would meditate, and everything was too loud and too bright, and even the curtains moving or the breeze, you know, things that I was, you know, everyone's like, what's going on with your mother? And now it just breaks my heart that she never got any validation. And then I see these things in my child, you know, and at least now we know what's going on. So.
And Lisa, I'm so glad you shared that story. I really appreciate it, because this is a condition that affects children, adolescents, adults, and it's pretty pervasive. I mean, 1 in 20 kids is diagnosed with this disorder. And like many other newer disorders, we do find that the previous generations clearly were suffering from stories and anecdotes that we hear. You know, you remember, you have these memories of your mother suffering from this
terrible
and trying to help herself. And I think the worst part is exactly what you said, Lisa, and that is exactly heartbreaking, which is if there is no name for this, if it's not recognized by the medical community, then there is no validation for the person who is suffering from it. And I think this is why it's so important, and I do appreciate this opportunity to talk about the book and to talk about this disorder, particularly now, because there is no recognition of this disorder at this point in an official way so that insurance companies would cover assessment, diagnosis, and treatment of the disorder. And so over the next couple of years, this is being considered to be put in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the next edition that's coming up in 2012. And so all the attention that we can place on this disorder is key, and the support is so important.
Yeah, it really is. You know, I've had the opportunity, and it's wonderful, to interview Dr. Lucy Miller, and I know that she has been doing a ton of work on trying to get it into the DSM-IV. Why do you think it hasn't been in there? Why is, I don't understand. I don't even know how to ask the question. It boggles my mind. Honestly, I don't understand why it's not validated.
Well, you know, your question comes from a very logical place, and unfortunately, we don't always approach everything from a logical place. It should be. I mean, certainly for those of us who work with kids and individuals with this disorder, parents, educators, clinicians, and as you said, Dr. Miller, we see this, you know, in a way that it affects the individual's functioning. It takes away from their quality of life. I think it's very unfortunate that some people in the medical community are hesitant to at least consider newer disorders and to think outside of the box and to think about things from a different perspective. I think change is very difficult, it's scary, and I think it takes people being open-minded and listening to our patients carefully and respectfully, and really believing what they're reporting as a first step. And then secondly, you know, the cost, I'm sure, has something to do with this, because certainly if this is recognized as a disorder that has its own coding and, you know, is required to be covered, I'm sure that expense is something that is being taken into consideration as well.
Yeah, you know, something that I've always wondered about is that, you know, this month is devoted to autism awareness. You know, it's National Autism Awareness Month in April. And I'm always, if my child has autism, are the therapies that help with sensory processing disorder going to help with their autism? Because is a sensory, is it from the same place?
That's a great question. So sensory issues are an important feature and component of autism. The most individuals, at least for as far as I know, more than half of the children with autism have clinically significant symptoms of SPD.
Okay.
We do see this being reported by families. And although it's not a criteria, it's not a diagnostic criteria for autism, it is recognized as an area of impairment. So if you're looking at the DSM-IV right now, They are listed under associated features and disorders, and they're listed as odd responses to sensory stimuli. So I certainly, in my work with kids on the spectrum of autism, have seen them present with sensory issues. And one of the things that we always recommend in the treatment of children with autism is sensory integration therapy, which can really relieve the child of a lot of the discomfort that they may feel in response to sensory stimuli that feels at an exaggerated level or at a level that feels uncomfortable for them.
And that would entail going to occupational therapy, who specializes in sensory processing disorder?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's exactly the way to go. It's to really seek an assessment with an occupational therapist who has a specialty in sensory integration therapy, have them assess the child, come up with what we call a sensory diet for the child. Think of this, the OT, as your nutritional consultant, creating a very individualized sensory diet for you that includes activities that are comfortable for the child in a safe environment, helping them get their senses used to and comfortable with the different sensory information that comes in.
I see. Okay. Yeah, it's so interesting, and you talk about in the book, you talk about everything. You have great tips for parents and their child is evaluated, and you have, differences between SPD and look-alike, disorders, and you have information on, tips for parents and teachers on making the classroom more SPD friendly. And we don't have time to go into all those things, but I just wanted to at least mention them because you have so many great things. But one thing that I wanted to ask about is that I really connected to the section on stress and how all the information comes into our bodies as stress. And for kids, that input is just more stress on an already, overstressed system. And you can tell us briefly about how stress affects the overall functioning of our children. That would be great.
Sure. As far as I know, this is a new idea in this field, and it really came to me just from day-to-day working with the kids that I was working with, just seeing how stressed out they were psychologically, physically, about anything that they were going to do, simple activities that typically growing children don't even think about. And all the energy that and thinking and planning that was going into this. Look, we think of stress as our body's response to any demand. So when you think about SPD and what the senses are going through every day, all day long, 24 hours a day, it takes a toll on the child's system. It's absolutely exhausting. It interferes with all the areas of functioning, and it really is for the child staying in the fight or flight mode all the time. They have to be alert, they have to be hypervigilant, they have to be aware all the time, and it increases your arousal level, and it really interferes with fully calming down and able to really just relax and enjoy yourself. And I think this is something that we need to recognize, and that's why it's so key to pay attention to this disorder. It really is taking a toll on these kids every day.
Yeah, it really is. Roy, this is so incredible. I wish we had more time. I definitely want to have you come back sometime in the near future. And in the meantime, how can people learn more about you and your wonderful work and your book?
Thank you so much. I'd love to come back and talk about this some more. They could visit my website, which is www.royaostovar.com. And there is a ton of information there, and they can connect with me, and I'm happy to answer questions for parents or educators and connect with the community some more.
Oh, well, this has been so wonderful. And if people want to reach me, they can go to itsyourhealthradio.org. And, I want to thank Future Horizons for teaming up with me during National Autism Awareness Month. It has been such a fantastic month of incredible authors like yourself, and I'm very grateful. And I hope everyone has a great week. Keep being healthy. Thanks again for an excellent month.